The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burnrate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister and Guy Jafrady.
Hello, welcome to Burnrate, the VC Insider podcast. I'm talking here with Guy Jafrady about the startup scene with a focus on venture capital. We've reached episode 95. We are recording on Wednesday, May 13th at 9 o'clock in the evening. This podcast is sponsored by our partner, Ara Ventures and Wenger Vieli. Hello, Guy. What are today's topics?
Today is another Transaction of the Month episode, and in the news we have the ZKB Pioneer Prize, which was awarded yesterday evening at Technopark, and then the bankruptcy of Farmy was finally published this week. We will definitely cover that as well. And as the third news item, we will briefly discuss Accelerator X, a new European startup acceleration program that also has partners in Switzerland. As the main topic, we have the Burnrate market snapshot for April on the program, and the listener question revolves around the gut feeling of VC investors. At the end, we will discuss Covalo's financing round as the transaction of the month in April.
That sounds like an exciting program. Let's start with the news. The first news item comes from the ZKB Pioneer Prize. You already hinted at it. Yesterday, the award ceremony took place at Technopark Zurich in front of around 350 guests. Guy, you were there, right?
Yes, absolutely. I attended yesterday. Many thanks for the invitation from ZKB from this side. It was extremely exciting. First, there was a keynote in the official part about failure, quite a different topic for such a startup prize, where actually the most promising startups are awarded. And the topic was that acceptance of failure should be integrated better into our culture. And there were also a few examples, of course, always with first it's a failure, and then basically the phoenix from the ashes, something exciting still emerges. In the end, it always comes back to successes that are celebrated after failures, and that you shouldn't give up. I found that interesting. Then all nominated startups were able to pitch, so 5 startups, 2 minutes each. It was definitely well done, very well prepared. I think we won't reveal here who won. And yes, afterwards, there was, of course, an extensive aperitif with networking opportunities, and there were quite a lot of exciting colleagues from the ecosystem there, met a few new people. And yes, all in all, I would say it was a well-organized and good event.
5 startups were in the final. RTDT won. We know the company with a sensor system for wind turbines. The main prize is famously endowed with 100,000 Swiss francs, and RTDT is developing AeroSense, a flexible sensor patch that is directly attached to the rotor blades and measures pressure, vibration, and stress there. And this data flows into a digital twin and is then intended to help make wind turbines more efficient, reduce material stress, and ultimately lower maintenance costs. And it wasn't just an RTDT show. 2 other startups were recognized as runners-up. GlycoEra, a biotech company developing new approaches for targeted treatment, especially of autoimmune diseases, and preparing a phase 1 study. And Roboa, which is building a robotic system that is basically a kind of robot snake for inspections in hard-to-access environments. This technology is apparently already being used by infrastructure operators and generating initial revenue. In addition, there was the audience award worth 5,000 Swiss francs. That went to Seacraft. The startup is working on high-performance chips based on thin-film lithium niobates. I had to read that out. So a technology that converts electrical signals very efficiently into optical signals. This is relevant for example, fast data transmission in fiber optics, data centers, AI infrastructure, and future communication networks. Yes, Guy, when you look at these finalists, wind energy, autoimmune therapies, robots for infrastructure, photonic chips, energy infrastructure, is this for you a good picture of where Swiss deep tech currently stands?
Before we go into the question here, I would first like to briefly express my congratulations to Eris and Imed. We know RTDT very well. We already covered them on Burnrate. They also gave us feedback on that. And Aris was one of our employees, actually a VC turned founder, and joined RTDT as a late co-founder. And the guys celebrated it extensively. And it was really nice to see how happy the two of them were. To come back to your question, whether these startups are a good picture of the Swiss deep tech scene, I would say, yes, in my eyes, that really stands out. We had topics that are not only technologically demanding, but also operate in very large markets. So energy, healthcare, infrastructure, data transmission, and yes, Roboa in construction tech. These are not just small problems, niche problems, but they are all solving problems in large markets that also represent enormous potential. It also shows that Swiss startups are often strong where it is about complex research, precision, and long development cycles. We have perseverance there. It may be a little less loud than some consumer app or consumer-facing product, but potentially much more substantial because enormous amounts of IP are being built there. And especially with a prize like the ZKB Pioneer Prize, which really has visibility. Yes, you could see very well now that deep tech is not just a buzzword, but yes, something that is really being pursued concretely in Switzerland. Now, as an investor, Max, which startup, aside from the winner RTDT, of course, do you find the most exciting from an investor perspective?
I quite like Seacraft. Everything related to AI infrastructure and making data centers more efficient is becoming extremely relevant right now. If the chips really enable high data rates while consuming less energy, then they are sitting on a very exciting topic here.
I naturally think so too. I also had very good discussions with the team after their presentation. And yes, overall, to wrap things up briefly, the event works not only as an award ceremony, but really is also a great showcase for different forms of deep tech from Switzerland.
For me, the real takeaway is that the ZKB Pioneer Prize doesn't simply show a single winning startup, but rather a fairly broad picture of what is currently being worked on in Switzerland. And that's what I find interesting. Let's move on to the second news item. It's a bitter one. eFarmy is finished. The Zurich-based online farm shop has ceased operations immediately and is initiating bankruptcy proceedings. And yes, for both Farmy and Pico Lebensmittel, with which Farmy had only merged in 2025. Farmy had long been one of the better-known Swiss food startups, founded in 2014, grew strongly, then received another major boost during COVID. At its peak, the company employed over 200 people. But after the pandemic, the volume apparently declined sharply and never really recovered. In 2024, there was already a harsh restructuring. The Ekublenz location was closed, 29 employees lost their jobs, and the merger with Pico Lebensmittel was supposed to bring synergies and reduce costs. But according to CEO Thomas Zimmermann, the revenue decline recently intensified. Now there is no sustainable perspective left, he said, and more than 100 employees are likely to lose their jobs. Guy, is Farmy perhaps a classic COVID boom case, meaning a startup that generated huge revenues during the pandemic but later realized that the changed consumer behavior simply would not last permanently?
I would say that this is certainly a classic COVID boom case. They were active much longer than COVID existed, but during COVID, they grew enormously. Accordingly, it really is a textbook example of how dangerous it can be to interpret temporary growth during the COVID period as a structural shift in society. During COVID, it looked like everyone would now only order groceries and everything else online. But afterwards, many customers apparently fell back into their old shopping routines, and accordingly, there was less revenue for Farmy and food delivery or online grocery delivery services. In addition to that, the margins are extremely tough and highly competitive. These are fresh products. It revolves around cold chains logistics. Then there are returns, last mile delivery. All of this is extremely expensive. And when the volume declines, the model suddenly collapses again under the fixed costs. If we zoom out a little now, Max, what is the biggest lesson from Farmy for you? Is it that food e-commerce in Switzerland is extremely difficult, or that startups should pay much earlier attention to profitability and cost structures after a hype moment?
It's a difficult question. We also saw this with Stash, with quick delivery. I mean, the costs are simply very high in Switzerland, and you can't just make them disappear unless you work together with delivery robots. There are also first attempts there. They also existed in Switzerland, but especially in the USA. Yes, and the cost structure is already ugly, right? And And I mean, naturally, food e-commerce in Switzerland is difficult anyway. You have a small market, relatively high wages, high logistics costs. But on the other hand, you also have very demanding customers, right? And the real problem is that if your model strongly depends on growth and volume, then that volume must not suddenly collapse. So if you say, focus immediately on profitability, okay, fair enough, do that, but then you will never be in a position to achieve market share, an interesting market share. That is exactly the problem that Farmy had, that we had at Stash, right? We grew very strongly, but you cannot have both. And when the market suddenly changes and everyone screams for profitability, then of course you cannot, let's say, correct the business model within 18 months. It simply takes longer, right? And yes, that is what happened to Farmy as well. I mean, they had the luck that during COVID demand existed. I remember that well, it exploded, right? Suddenly you had huge numbers of people paying crazy basket prices. And then of course, Farmy also thought, yes, now we go full speed, now we'll become many people, hire many people and so on. And they assumed, and you can't blame them for that, that growth would continue after COVID, or rather nobody knew how long COVID would last. I mean, that it then went so quickly and a solution was found and so on and so forth. Nobody knew all that. I mean, you would have been stupid as a startup not to use that opportunity, right? And then having to backtrack afterwards is very difficult, and they simply couldn't manage it. Therefore, this is now, unfortunately, the logical consequence.
Yes, I mean, that is an important point you raise, especially for startups with physical logistics, that one must keep in mind again and again that the story can be super exciting. I mean, Farmy, everyone really ordered there. It was truly extremely cool. Their service was also really well done. But in the end, in such cases, operational excellence also decides. And with groceries, yes, as you said, the room for error is extremely small. If demand drops a little, then suddenly you are below the margins and in the red. That is then unfortunate.
Exactly. Let's come back to the third news item. With Accelerator X, a new program for AI startups is launching. The exciting thing is that it is not primarily about coaching, pitch training, or investor access, but about early market access. The three-month program brings startups together with potential pilot customers from the very first week. For this, Accelerator X uses a network of 34 marketing and communications agencies in 30 European countries. This network includes over 2,000 specialists in marketing and communications primarily. In Switzerland, for example, the St. Gallen agency Die Botschafter is participating as the Swiss hub. The target group are AI startups in the seed phase that already have an initial functional product version, and they are looking for solutions for real problems, for example, in MarTech, health tech, fintech, retail tech, or climate tech. Applications are open until June 30th, 2026. 10 to 12 startups are planned, and the program will begin in September. Accelerator X was co-initiated by Axel Thoma, lecturer at the University of St. Gallen. His point is interesting. The biggest hurdle for AI startups is often not technology and not necessarily capital either, but market access. And he is, of course, not wrong there. Guy, do you find it plausible that for many AI startups today, the bottleneck is no longer the technology, but access to real customers and concrete use cases?
It depends somewhat on how deep or how strongly deep tech-oriented the AI startup is. There are, of course, startups developing a completely new model, and there it may be a bit less relevant. But just a few weeks ago, we had Olli Flückiger from Vibe.vc as a guest with us, and with Vibe.vc, they focus precisely on application cases built with AI, and I would say these are rather less deep tech and very close to applications. And there you really have to say, especially in AI, the market for application AI, meaning basically wrappers that already contain some technology, is extremely loud at the moment. And there are extremely many teams building demos and tools. And at first glance, they all look impressive when they are pitched. And they are also created very quickly with AI, meaning they are very quickly copyable. They are further developed at rapid speed. And that means the decisive question then becomes, yes, are they really solving a problem for the customer, and is someone paying for it? And that is why I find the focus on pilot customers of the program from Meaning Accelerator X. Rather interesting. An AI startup can look very good in a pitch, but in a real customer context, that's where it becomes clear whether the product actually works and whether there is willingness to pay. Would you say that Accelerator X is especially exciting for MarTech startups, Max, precisely because of the agency network? Or is it also for the other AI startups? You mentioned several other industries. Can it really become relevant there as well?
The obvious sweet spot is MarTech because the network comes from marketing and communications agencies. And there are also direct use cases such as content, campaigns, analytics, and so on and so forth. And agencies can relatively quickly test whether a tool helps them or their customers. Although I believe it can definitely also be applied more broadly, especially because these agencies are active in 30 countries, a startup can get feedback from different markets relatively early on. That is valuable, provided they have a clear communication, sales, or customer-side application that can also be tested well. And for me, the core message is an accelerator is especially valuable when it doesn't just talk about market access, but actually creates real access. And that is exactly what Accelerator X is trying to do.
This episode is presented by AARE Ventures, the Bernese Business Angel Club. AARE Ventures connects ambitious Swiss startups with experienced investors who offer more than just capital. A strong network, real expertise, and hands-on support for the crucial early steps. If you want to grow as a startup or as an investor are looking for access to the most exciting early stage deals, then apply for our next event at www.araventures.ch Wenger and Vielli, your partner law firm for startups. Whether founding, financing round or exit, startups face complex legal challenges. Wenger and Vielli supports founders in every phase of their company with tailored advice on corporate law, financing, tax matters, and IP protection. Wenger and Vielli, your legal advisor for startups.
Let's move on to today's main topic, the burn rate market snapshot for April 2026. And as always, we start with Switzerland. We have, of course, compiled the entire list. And according to this, around 222 million Swiss francs were invested in 28 financing rounds in Swiss startups and scale-ups during April. In addition, there were 11 million francs in grants and loans, and there were also various transactions where no amounts were disclosed. In terms of volume, April was therefore below the strong March. Back then in March, 333 million were invested in 19 financing rounds, with Candu, of course, accounting for the lion's share of the volume with 175 million. The breadth is significantly stronger, though. In April, we see not just one or two large outliers like in March, but a whole series of relevant rounds across different sectors.
Exactly. And it's important to emphasize again, our compilation is, of course, not completely sharply separated between equity, debt, secondary grants or loans. Especially in April, this is particularly relevant because we have several special cases. A secondary at BLP Digital, for example, a pre-IPO financing at Sentiel, a capital increase at Onward Medical, and then, as mentioned, several undisclosed or strategic transactions. If you look at the large financings, BLP Digital naturally stands out with a $50 million secondary from Goldman Sachs. This is not fresh primary capital for the company, but a very strong signal. A profitably growing Swiss AI scale-up with more than 450 enterprise customers is being viewed by a global asset manager as a category leader candidate in AI-supported enterprise automation. That is quite interesting.
And the second major transaction as well, Onward Medical, was a capital increase of 40 million euros. Not a classic startup fundraise, but really a financing on the capital market. Then we have Gentiel or Sentiel with around 30 million they raised shortly before the IPO, the reverse merger with HT5. That is also an exciting Swiss capital market story. We also discussed it on Burn Rate. You can gladly listen to that as well. It is almost the opposite of a classic venture capital financing.
Yes, we had several other transactions between 10 and 25 million. Acutronic with $25 million in defense tech or aerospace operations case. Then the climate tech case from Planetary with 22 million Swiss francs and the 15 million round from Daphnet Technology was also communicated. There was also an exciting transaction in cybersecurity, namely that of Bug Bounty Switzerland with 12 million. That was a Series A and the over 10 million round from Alpine AI. Those were also relatively large financing rounds.
And when I look at the list here overall, in March, the picture was strongly shaped by AI, semiconductors, and several monster rounds. And in April, the picture is much broader. These are no longer just foundational model and software stories, but we see AI in enterprise processes like BLP, sovereign AI at Alpine AI, and AI diagnostics at Moonlight AI, and naturally cybersecurity and climate tech that raised rounds here.
The exits in April were exciting as well. Polariton was acquired by Marvel Technology, a clear AI infrastructure exit. Polariton's plasmonics technology fits directly into the next generation of optical interconnects for data centers, and besides other exits, I personally find it noteworthy that the assets of 90 Labs were acquired by BD.
And in addition, there were two major special topics. Terra Quantum, they are planning a NASDAQ listing through a SPAC deal with a valuation of slightly more than $3 billion, and Vivardis. Through a strategic minority stake by Apollo, it achieved unicorn status. Yes, that shows that April was not only about the financing volume of over 220 million Swiss francs, but also many other exciting dynamics and events in the Swiss financing world.
The conclusion for Switzerland: April was not the month of one dominant mega round, but a month with very broad activity. Particularly strong were AI applications with clear enterprise use cases, climate and industrial tech, medtech, biotech, and cybersecurity. And what is striking, many rounds have international investors or strategic players in the syndicate. So we heard Goldman Sachs, Apollo, EQT, Marvel, Taranis, Utker Ventures, and many more. That shows Swiss companies are globally competitive. But the old question remains: how much value creation, ownership, and upside remains in the Swiss ecosystem in the long term?
We will find that out later. Let's also take a look at Europe. In April, the numbers show a similar picture in Europe as in Switzerland. Activity remained stable, and capital is also being deployed more selectively in Europe. According to tech.eu, there were 290 financing rounds with a total volume of 5.1 billion euros in April. In March, by comparison, there were two rounds more, 292 deals and significantly more capital, 7.5 billion euros. That means almost the same number of rounds, but significantly more capital.
Yes, exactly. Deal activity remains stable, but the large capital blocks are being distributed in a more concentrated and selective way. Tech.eu therefore describes April as a month in which European tech financings cooled down, although deal flow remained stable. Sector-wise, there was an interesting shift in April. While AI dominated in March, cleantech led in April with 1.3 billion euros. This shows Europe is not just an AI story. Capital allocation rotates between different industries.
The largest deal, as mentioned, was actually even slightly more than 1.3 billion euros, if I'm reading this correctly here. Steg from Sweden raised 1.4 billion euros for green steel, meaning sustainable steel production. And then Inevitable Intelligence from England, meaning from the UK, raised 1.1 billion US dollars in a seed round, so a major AI research case. We are also excited to see how that story develops. In third place came Aura Aero from France with 340 million euros, and they are building hybrid electric systems for aviation. After that, we saw several infrastructure and deep tech topics with financing rounds of 100 to 250 million euros per company, so quite impressive.
Regionally, the UK also remained the leading funding hub in April. UK funding reached nearly 2 billion euros in April after more than 2.5 billion euros in March, still clearly the leading position. Exits look rather weaker. There was a decline from 52 exits in March to 35 in April, so around one third fewer. This confirms a pattern we have seen for months. Funding is selectively available. Liquidity through exits remains challenging.
So one can say that in Europe as well. April does what it wants. Activity is there, but not really euphoria with all the rain and weather changes. not a hype month, but a month that showed several capital-intensive strategic deep tech bets.
Exactly. Let's move on to the listener question. And this week's listener question comes from Leander. He asks, I would be interested in how you evaluate founder teams at Kojo, meaning our fund. Do you have a framework, for example, for leadership, conflict capability, and role distribution? Or in the end, does it still come down to gut feeling in the pitch? Yes, of course, everyone says in the end, we invest in people. And that is naturally true, and you hear it from many investors. But what does that mean concretely? How do you recognize whether a founder team is really resilient? So the topic of resilience, whether it can solve conflicts productively, whether the roles are clearly distributed, whether the founders still function when the first plan fails, which is almost always the case, when financing takes longer, which is always the case, or the market reacts differently than expected, which is always the case. And that is where it becomes exciting, because when it comes to product, market size, revenue, customer acquisition cost, lifetime value, or runway, many investors are very analytical. There are models everywhere, there are benchmarks, there are comparables. But when it comes to the team, it often becomes more difficult. People speak about chemistry, energy, persuasiveness, drive, or gut feeling. And Leander's question addresses exactly that point. If team dynamics are so decisive, why are they often assessed less structurally than the numbers in the pitch deck? And is the famous gut feeling of VCs really an advantage or sometimes simply a bias that can become expensive? Guy, let's start the discussion with that. At its core, Leander asks, is the gut feeling of VCs regarding founder teams an asset or the most expensive bias in the portfolio? How would you answer that?
Yes, very exciting question. I mean, gut feeling is certainly an asset. And if you are evaluating a food tech startup, you shouldn't do it while hungry or right after eating, but with a neutral level of hunger, let's say, not too hungry and not too full. You just must not confuse gut feeling with the truth, but it is definitely an asset that you sharpen over time as an investor. You develop a certain instinct for how to assess cases and founders. I mean, you have to say that experience is not worthless, but you still have to critically question and reflect on yourself each time, especially when you have seen many founders, then you develop a sense and feeling for how someone thinks, how they communicate, whether there is really substance behind the story. But the problem is that feelings can also shift very quickly. Suddenly you mistake charisma for leadership and self-confidence for competence, or you compare founders to successful founders because they have a certain similarity. And then suddenly you read real potential into it and are completely wrong. With founder teams, it is dangerous because you often have only a few interactions before investing. A pitch, a few conversations, maybe a dinner. And from that, you have to derive whether these people can withstand extreme uncertainty for 5 to 10 years, go through conflicts, and endure enormous pressure from the market, the team, and private life. And that is a huge prediction you are making based on a very thin data foundation over just a few hours. Therefore, you can perceive gut feeling as a signal, but it should never shift the entire investment case into a definite yes. We absolutely must do this.
And what would a VC have to concretely do differently in order to evaluate founder teams better without directly turning it into, let's say, a soulless assessment center?
The first step, I would say, is team quality. You have to take it just as seriously as the market or the product and everything else that can be analyzed based on numbers. You cannot simply say, yes, the team is actually the most important thing. So you also have to define what you mean by that. And there are several examples that you can, yes, assess here or examine more closely. How do the founders make decisions? How do they deal with contradictions? Are there clear role distributions between the founders? And can they openly address conflicts? Have they already solved difficult situations together? And how do they react when you attack their assumptions? Those are always exciting assumptions, but sometimes you still have to question them. And I always try to proceed in a structured way and not ask these questions randomly, but systematically integrate them into the due diligence process. So every team receives a few specific core questions in every conversation, and several people on our side, meaning you and I, and when we involve someone external, should examine exactly the same topics independently from one another, just like you would do with the financial model. then yes, we discuss our observations and how we individually interpreted them so that we don't simply have an assessment saying, yes, the CEO was really strong, but instead, what exactly did he do well and what specifically did I find good? Where was he or she convincing? And then you have a basis for discussion, and that doesn't make the process impersonal. But on the contrary, it forces you to look much more closely at how people react. Now, let's turn the question back to you, Max. Why does this gut feeling persist so stubbornly in the VC world, even though everyone knows it is extremely prone to error?
Yes, because gut feeling fits the story of the industry. VC lives from outliers, meaning exceptions, and from the one founder who wins against all odds, and from the investor who saw something others did not see. And these stories are part of VC culture. Just yesterday, we had a discussion together, and I spoke to you with full conviction about a startup because I had seen the founder, and not because the case was rationally interesting. You, on the other hand, had never met the founder. You only saw the numbers and then thought this was not an exciting case at all. It was far too expensive and didn't fit at all.
Indeed.
And that's precisely the point. I had met this founder twice and thought, hey, this is a winner type. He can change the world. And this gut feeling gave me a good feeling. And that is exactly what is exciting when you look at the really big bets, especially the older bets from Michael Moritz of Sequoia or John Doerr of Kleiner Perkins. These were always bets where at that point in time, you could not see it. It was purely gut feeling from those VCs because they found the founders extremely exciting and believed this person could truly make it. And naturally, they also did due diligence. But what was especially convincing was that they recognized much earlier than others that something huge could emerge here. But that is exactly where the danger lies, because when an investment works out, gut feeling is often glorified in hindsight, right? When it doesn't work out, people often talk about market, timing, and product, but more rarely about whether the team may have been misjudged. That happens very rarely, and I believe many VCs overestimate how well they can derive long-term collaboration, conflict capability, and leadership quality from short encounters. Therefore, in my opinion, it is important not to conduct these conversations online, but exactly as we do at Kojo. We go there very quickly. We look at things on site, we observe the facial expressions and body language of the founders and try to form a concrete picture of the situation. That brings enormous value.
Not just being cowboys and making quick decisions, snap judgments, but following through analytically and taking everything seriously from day one when you get to know the startup and absorbing and reflecting on these signals. Max, what is a practical takeaway for investors who hear Leander's question and say, hey, okay, we want to improve our team assessment?
Yes, no rocket science. Build yourselves a small, repeatable system, not a huge procedure, no founder psychology show, but a clear set of questions and criteria. For example, investors could evaluate four things after every founder meeting. First, how clearly are the roles distributed within the founder team? Second, how do they deal with conflict or resistance? The question is, can you even assess that? You have to ask and ask about past conflicts. Third, how well can they learn and change their opinions? You can test that with a provocative question, for example. Fourth, how resilient is the collaboration under pressure? That is also highly hypothetical because maybe the founders have never really been under pressure up to that point. Yes, and very important. Don't only discuss it together during the partner meeting because then everyone influences one another, but instead note it down individually beforehand. What did I observe? What is my hypothesis? Where do I need more evidence? So it is very important here that the partners at VCs also have bilateral contact with the founders and not simply go into the investment committee and the senior partner who speaks first gives a devastating judgment about the founder team and then the case is basically dead, right? You really have to proceed cleverly there so that you have a realistic representation of reality, so to speak. That is what I can pass along to investors here.
So let's come to the transaction of the month. The decision was not easy regarding which transaction we wanted to prepare for this episode. We discussed it intensively and ultimately decided on Covalo. We have known the company since its founding a few years ago and have also looked at various financing rounds and exchanged ideas with the team.
Exactly. The startup from Zurich completed a seed extension round of 3.5 million euros in April 2026. The round was led by High Innov with participation from the existing investors, namely HTGF and Seed and Speed Ventures. Covalo was founded in 2021. You mentioned it. They are based in Zurich and operate at the intersection of ingredient data infrastructure, B2B marketplace, and AI-supported product development for the personal care industry. What is exciting is that this is not a classic marketplace, but rather the attempt to become the shared data backbone of an entire industry, essentially an operating system for ingredient data.
At the same time, it is exciting because it is not a university case, meaning not an ETH or EPFL spin-off, but rather they were founded out of a corporation as a spin-off. The original platform, what was it called? Cambry, was launched in 2018 as an innovation project within Clariant, a specialty chemicals company from Switzerland. They used the platform internally for several years and had already indexed around 40,000 beauty ingredients, and they had already attracted users from several thousand brands and over 1,000 suppliers. Then in March 2021, it became concrete and the spin-off was established as an AG named Covalo with the former Cambry employees.
Covalo was founded by the two co-CEOs, Timo von Barmen and Jan Gilbers. They still run the company together today. What is strategically smart about the origin story is that through the years at Clariant, they not only built a functioning product and an existing user base, but above all, generated a deep understanding of the supplier side. If, as a platform, you want to connect both sides of a market, for example, brands and suppliers, then it is an enormous advantage to understand the pain points of both sides well. And that is naturally the case for Timo and Jan.
Absolutely, you can say that. And they are addressing a structural, huge problem. The personal care industry, cosmetics, skincare, hair care, and all related categories in the FMCG market. That is a market of over $500 billion. And it is still growing massively by over 5%, according to some research, even over 7%. But innovation in this industry depends extremely heavily on ingredient data. And exactly this data is extremely fragmented. It exists on some document that gets delivered or maybe stored as a PDF. And every single product that people put on their face or wash their hair with has 35 to 40 ingredients. And sometimes these ingredients then have 20 or 30 documents attached to them, safety sheets, regulatory compliance, sustainability, et cetera, et cetera. And all of this in different formats from different suppliers. And you can imagine quite a challenge and data chaos that can be generated there.
And that is exactly what makes up everyday life in research and development. The regulation in procurement is extremely inefficient. Teams spend a lot of time manually gathering, validating, and reconciling data through email, PDFs, and Excel. Data exchange between brands and suppliers is still fundamentally analog. In addition, a new product takes on average 3 to 5 years until market launch, and part of the problem for Covalo comes down to inefficient data management.
They also told us they expect regulatory tailwinds. By 2030, many products are expected to require reformulation, especially because of the EU Green Deal, microplastics, and packaging reforms. And that means a massive increase in data complexity. And they want to become the structured database there. And then, of course, also apply AI to their data in order to make the industry's modern digital workflows as efficient as possible.
Very briefly, what does Covalo actually do? Covalo started as an ingredient discovery marketplace, meaning essentially a search engine through which formulators can find raw materials, compare them, and directly inquire with suppliers. Today, with over 8,000 listed ingredients from more than 1,500 suppliers, it is one of the largest ingredient platforms worldwide. And the decisive factor is that the company then strategically evolved away from a pure marketplace toward a central data infrastructure for the entire industry.
In doing so, the platform connects directly with product information management systems from suppliers, namely research and development and other workflows of the brands. And when a supplier updates a compliance certificate on Covalo, then naturally all brands using the raw material immediately see it and it is updated instantly. Which, of course, was not the case before. This now replaces the entire cycle of emails, PDFs, and manual updates.
Yes, and that is already an important difference compared to classic marketplaces or a business intelligence tool. Covalo does not simply want to offer better search or prettier dashboards, but rather become a neutral shared data infrastructure. Essentially a system of record in which ingredient data is managed in a structured way once and can then be reused everywhere. Covalo now also plans to build industry-specific AI agents for conversational analytics, automated RFI workflows, data extraction, but also data enrichment and regulatory compliance checks. And why Covalo is convinced they can achieve this. They are first building the data engine and only afterwards introducing agents that are trained on the data. According to Covalo, this is actually one of the most important success criteria.
Let's move on to traction. Covalo already connects more than 1,500 suppliers with over 6,000 brands today. So definitely growth since the founding or spin-off from Clariant. And these brands and suppliers are based in more than 145 countries. The customer list contains some heavyweights. We will come back to that shortly later. From the feedback we received from Timo, which we will also play in.
The operational metrics available to us support this. Platform engagement increased by 84% in 2025 with 1.3 million monthly interactions. Net revenue retention is above 145%. That means existing customers spend significantly more year after year. And according to Covalo, the largest customers expand their usage by 2 to 3 times per year. That is certainly a strong signal for PMF, for product market fit and the platform's network effect.
We received feedback from Timo von Bargen. He said that on the supplier side, they work with large multinationals such as Givaudan and Symrise. They are in the enterprise tier and have signed multi-year contracts with Covalo. That is exciting because they are increasingly also winning medium-sized players like Shimmer and Schwartz. And these companies use Covalo as their single point of truth for all product data. So this data case really seems to be resonating in the industry. On the brand side, they work with houses of brands such as Puig and are currently in advanced discussions with 8 of the 10 largest consumer care brands worldwide. That sounds quite impressive in terms of traction. And these companies all manage billion-dollar portfolios and still do so through PDFs, emails, and Excel. And that is exactly the feedback we received here from Timo.
Let's also come to the financing history. Covalo was spun out of Clario at the beginning of 2021. You mentioned it. The first institutional financing round came in March 2023. A seed round led by HTGF, the high-tech Gründerfonds Germany, with participation from Speed and Seed Ventures, the GECO Group, and several angel investors, including a former Deloitte Germany partner for chemicals and sustainability and a former Coty executive.
In that round, around 1.5 million Swiss francs were invested into the company in several closings. At different valuations. When I look here at our modeled cap table, the first investors paid a pre-money valuation of 3.5 million, and for the following investors, the valuation had risen to 6 and then 7 million respectively.
Now, 3 years after the seed extension round of 3.5 million follows with High Innov in the lead. High Innov is a European B2B fund based in Paris, Lyon, and Munich, typically investing in Series A and B, meaning B2B SaaS and digital infrastructure. HTGF and Seed and Speed continue to participate as existing investors. And the seed extension was a flat round, meaning the shares were issued at the same price as those of the previous round. Ergo, the new investors paid an 8.4 million pre-money valuation.
So The post-money valuation is now $12.5 million and a total of $5 million has already been invested into Cavallo through equity. So at this point, we are pleased to briefly welcome Martin Möllmann from HTGF, the high-tech Gründerfonds. He is a principal there. In this role, he acts as a board observer at Cavallo, led the investment in the first round and also in the second round. Naturally, we are extremely pleased that you are giving us the investor's perspective here. Martin, welcome to Burn Rate.
Hello, Guy. Happy to be here.
Martin, let's jump straight into the questions. HTGF has been invested in Cavallo since 2023 and has now participated again in the seed extension. What was your investment rationale back then in 2023 and what has developed since then that made you say, hey, we are increasing our exposure and participating again now?
So I think what continues to fascinate us, besides the team's deep expertise, which is not so common in this market, is actually also the sheer market size itself, because it's about this immensely large market of FMCGs, meaning fast-moving consumer goods and the production and development of new products in this segment. And you really notice when you deal with it a bit, when you also talk to some players and customers in this market, that there is a need there, a need to automate a great deal, because the complexity has increased immensely in recent years. The whole topic of regulation, the whole topic of sustainability, these are all things that are increasingly becoming part of this entire topic of production and product development. And the companies there are not overwhelmed, I wouldn't say that, but they definitely perceive it as a significant challenge and need support there. And Cavallo is a great solution that can offer exactly that, namely building these bridges so that you understand much better what market offerings even exist when you are formulating new products. And that hasn't changed. I would even say the opposite. The topic has become even more relevant, especially when we now look at all these tariff issues that are increasingly impacting internationally. That means a broader picture of the market and available ingredients for producers is extremely important, and Cavallo can help there. And that has rather been confirmed, and that is why we are happy to continue being part of it.
And now coming a bit to the numbers that Cavallo communicated in the press release, they are extremely strong, 1,500 suppliers, more than 6,000 brands, 1.3 million monthly interactions. That is enormous. And then they also have a super net revenue retention. Which of these metrics is the most important for you as an investor in recognizing product market fit? And perhaps you can also say a word or two about revenue. Maybe that would go too far, though. Of course, you don't have to go too far out on the branch there.
So I think there is never this one number that somehow makes the difference, but it is always a combination of extremely many things. We have simply seen that usage has increased tremendously, which in turn indicates that this need for such a solution is highly relevant. And above all, this also has to be said, Cavallo has actually not spent any money on paid marketing, really not a single cent. Everything is organic. A lot naturally also comes through customer contacts, a lot through trade fairs, because in this sector, a lot still happens through trade fairs. But they have built a brand awareness that works so well that they have been able to steadily increase these numbers again and again. So that is one thing that convinces us, and what you can also see when you think about what we could do now if we started spending some money, then there is a lot possible. The other thing is, of course, this net revenue retention you just mentioned. They have extremely loyal customers, and the customers also see the value in the solution. There is hardly any churn, really very minimal, and when it happens, it is usually because the company exits the market or something like that. But once they are involved, they see the value and then book more packages or want larger solutions, sometimes building their complete customer portals on Cavallo's solution because they already have so much data that they can build on. And this also enables them to now set up such a customer portal within just a few days. Earlier, that was much more complicated. But they invested a great deal of brain power into it so that there is now a very good solution there. And overall, we are very satisfied with the development. They also did this with a very disciplined approach, especially regarding the team. They didn't overpay and hire 50 people or something like that, as some others in the segment did who had the backing of large industrial conglomerates, but rather did it very disciplined, focused very well on the right and important topics. And therefore, it was, of course, no question for us that we would continue, and we are happy to continue this journey with Cavallo and now also together with High Innov.
So it sounds as if the seed has really caught the earth and is now beginning to grow slowly. What does Cavallo now have to show in the next 12 to 18 or 24 months so that this seed extension becomes a really strong Series A story with an enormous valuation boost? Is it mainly about revenue or enterprise customers, internationalization, or they also want to integrate much more AI into the product? What evidence do they really need so that the starting point for the Series A is the right one.
Exactly. So I think what we definitely have to do now is monetize the traction we already have even more and convert it even more into customer portals and larger contracts. They already now have their first contracts that are clearly six-figure contracts. And there we still see a lot of potential on both sides. On one side, there are the FMCG brands that depend on the data. On the other side, you naturally also have the suppliers, meaning those actually providing these ingredients, and naturally they also want to participate. They also want to offer their customers a very good offering so that they can always access the data and always receive the latest information, perhaps also about new ingredients and so on. And we simply notice that customers are increasingly open to going onto a solution like Covalo because they see that the interaction with their potential users is very, very high. And that means it is very much about contracts. Naturally, it is also about this enterprise fit. That means bringing in larger customers, but also maintaining this net revenue retention, meaning expanding the existing customer relationships. Because you always have to remember, I don't know, in a house of brands like L'Oreal or something similar, you have extremely many brands behind it. And if you can gradually work your way through that, then it makes tremendous sense and is a lot of fun because you can repeatedly share success stories within the corporation. And that will be the goal for the next 12 to 18 months. Also with the understanding that the sales cycles there do not, let's say, happen with a snap of the fingers. The team is very experienced in this and also acts with a certain patience and repeatedly identifies and addresses the important players and gives them the right talking points again and again. But that is a topic that will certainly occupy us even more over the next 12 to 18 months.
Hey, extremely exciting, Martin. Thank you very much for your insights. And naturally, we wish you a lot of success with the investment in Covalo and, of course, also the Covalo team so that they can implement everything the way it has now been planned together with you.
Thank you very much.
What will the capital now be used for? Timo, one of the founders, revealed the following. We are currently around 20 people, he says, and are now hiring selectively in two focus areas. First, we are expanding our data and AI team in Zurich because that is the core of our defensibility. The data quality, the timeliness, the AI agents running on top of it, that is our moat. Second, we are investing in sales and go-to-market. Until now, we were very founder-led in sales. That got us far. But for the next phase, we need a sales organization that scales independently of John and me.
A, and they also said something about what their key milestones are to reach for the Series A. I quote, first, product expansion. We are building the next layer above our data layer, meaning intelligence and the first productive AI agents. Second, monetizing the first use cases. We currently have several pilots running, among others in the area of regulatory compliance. These must transition from pilot to paid product. And third, significantly expand the customer base, especially on the brand side, where the pipeline is now opening up. The overarching goal remains clear: to become the data backbone of the consumer goods industry. Everything we do up to the Series A contributes to that. That is Timo's statement. Yes, when we look at it, the bull case is clear. If Covalo manages to establish itself as the shared data foundation of the personal care industry, then an extremely strong vertical platform case emerges. The industry is extremely fragmented, regulation-driven, and hungry for data, exactly the environment in which structured data plus AI agents can deliver real leverage. The NRR of over 145% that they state, along with the high-profile customers and network effects between suppliers and brands, really speak for themselves, I would say. Yes, there is also the bear case. I mean, 3.5 million for the planned expansion is certainly tight, especially if enterprise sales cycles at larger companies become long.
Right? And therefore, yes, one can also definitely be skeptical as an investor. I am more positive there because I am very impressed. But as mentioned, you naturally also have to consider the downside. As a conclusion, Covalo is an exciting Swiss B2B platform case. We still have those in Switzerland too. One really has to mention that here on Burn Rate. We don't always only have deep tech cases. This is not simply a hype topic, but they are tackling a real structural industry problem and have already spent over 5 years building an impressive user base and traction. So that was Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. If you want to support our podcast, subscribe to the newsletter and share it within your network. Thank you very much for listening. We wish you a wonderful weekend. Take care and bye.